This podcast is proudly brought to you by Rest Tonic, whose purpose is to enable well-being and success through the power of sleep. So this person is familiar to Sarnie riders that have been participating in what would be 11 Sarnies now. Dale Harley is the sales and marketing executive from Rest Tonic, but more importantly, he's going to be attempting his 11th Sarnie to see this year. Is that right?
Yeah, Doug, that's right. Every Sarnie has been special, always come back with special memories, and yeah, this year will be the 11th one.
So that's our common thread, yeah? As in, that's where I met you. And if we think about, have you been part of Sarnie to See pre-Rest Tonic, or was your introduction to the event through Rest Tonic?
I think before CUP became part of Sarnie, I think Rest Tonic was still involved in the race, but yeah, it was mainly through CUP's involvement in the race.
Okay, and did you start cycling because of that, or were you cycling before that?
I just started cycling because of that.
So cool, man. I think that's also one of the cool things about Sarnie is the fact that so many people get exposed to the event weren't necessarily riders, and now you've adopted the most expensive habits in the world.
It's an investment in your health. That's what I keep telling the wife.
100%. I have a similar justification, and I'm pretty sure most people listening in have the same sentiment as well. But on that, arriving at Sarnie to See from the outside, I would say not as a cyclist, what intrigued you about it? What got you thinking, this is a sport I want to do?
Sarnie is the most iconic mountain bike race. Just experiencing that Umco Valley, I think, if you've experienced that once, that's the most fun you'll ever have on a bike. And yeah, for me, it's just, you don't know what's around the next corner, what's over the next bump, and it's just the adventure. That's what I love about mountain biking.
But you're an adventurous soul, but you've done some pretty crazy stuff, hey? Because, of course, naturally, I did some stalking. Comrades Marathon, Cape Epic, Full Ironman, Midmar Mile, Wines to Wales, Cap Sarnie to See, Bergen Bush, 361, Tunkwa Trek, Two Oceans. Are there any events left to do, or what's next?
There's still some I need to conquer. I love the endurance races. I love just testing, challenging myself. Still need to do like an Atukwas, and there's a few others out there that I'd love to do. But yeah, for me, it's all about just I'm no pro mountain biker, but I just love to test, challenge myself.
Out of those lists of events that have rattled off there, which one's been your nemesis, your hardest?
I would say, the Cape Epic, the conditions at that race, that does test you to the limits. But I've even had over the years some real hard Sarnie days in some tough weather conditions that have also been quite challenging.
Some of those years, if we think back to those day twos when you wake up in that low mist over Mackenzie and it's somehow 3 degrees. And the route has to be diverted. You've done a couple of those.
Yeah, haven't? No, we've had some interesting Sarnies, but yeah, even those tough ones are the memories that stick.
100%. It's strange. Like we suckers for punishment in many respects, but that's what I think keeps the sport so interesting, in particular Sarnie to See. It's quite a different event in the sense that it's still a point to point. Many events now are not going point to point. But the route is established, so there are not many variations. I think off last year, there's about 15 Ks of new single track towards the end of day one. But outside of that, it's for the most part very similar. But what keeps it interesting is variable weather conditions, the people that you're riding with, your level of fitness. It always keeps you on your toes.
And for McGlenn and the team, they keep raising the bar every year. And each year that race is just next level. It's still my favorite race on the calendar, and yeah, pray to God I can do another 11.
So tell me a little bit about your pre-training camp in the wilderness. You were telling me a little bit about it earlier on. It sounds like it was a very intense training camp.
Had a good ride from Wilderness last week to we finished in Jeffreys Bay through beautiful parts of the country that I've never experienced before, through the Bavians, Otaniqua Pass. Good bunch of people, interesting guys. But yeah, that was basically my Sani training camp. But yeah, some good riding, and yeah, we stay in a beautiful country.
Yeah, we absolutely do. That part of the world I've only explored two or three times, and on the occasions I have explored, it's also been on a bike. And I'm so grateful that I got to see that. In fact, that's back on the riding bucket list. Although, you know, kind of you tick things off and you want to move on, I want to go back and ride that neck of the woods more. There's so much out there.
Yeah, no, there's actually so much good riding in this country, and geez, so much to still explore.
Yeah, 100%. Taking a couple of steps back, I think around 6 years ago, yourself and your friend Lance, both Restonic boys, decided that you were going to take it up a notch at the SANETC. And that was to do the double header, so to ride the trail and then finish the trail and go straight into riding the race. So for those of you that are wondering how the logistics worked, there were vehicles obviously involved, also helicopters. But from memory, it was day one, day two, day three of the trail, and then you finished the trail and got in a helicopter, flew back up to Underberg, and then started probably a few hours after the last batch of the race, but still somehow managed to ride through most of the field of the race for day one. That was your longest day. So it would have been day three trail for you, followed by straight away into day one race. Whose brainchild was this?
Myself and Lance Metz, my riding partner at the time. I mean, always looking to do things that people haven't tried or done before. I mean, he's climbed Everest before, he's written an exam on the peak of Kilimanjaro, so he's used to doing some crazy things. And yeah, we thought it would be a good idea, and then we chatted to a sugarcane farmer, and he said he can help out with a helicopter ride from Scottsboro to back to Glencairn. So we thought, okay, we just need to get another set of bikes, and then we can do this. And yeah, we ended up, we were supposed to take it easy on the trail to give us enough steam for that second leg of day one, and ended up going off the plan, and we ended up giving it horns. We won the trail at quite a good pace, and we then got in the chopper, flew to the start of Glencairn, started about 2 hours after the last batch, and ended up catching the back markers after about, I think, 55 Ks. Quite an adventure. We had to climb over farm gates. We didn't have water points in the first part of day one, so we had to pick up bottles on the floor and use that to hydrate ourselves. And, we ended up finishing day one. Day two was... we almost buggered it up. We had a bad crash down the Umco on day two. Both going over the bars, I cracked two ribs and my handlebars went into my arm. Had to have stitches at the end of that day. So, yeah, it was quite a mission to finish that day and day three, but we did it.
Incredible. Jeez, was it a lapse of concentration on the day two of the race, or what? How did you end up crashing? Did you see a slung any boss, or what happened?
It was going down, I think, Tamika's Detour, and Lance was actually chatting to a mate behind, about 50, 60 meters behind, and then he tried to catch up, and he tried to go in front of me, and then the single track narrowed a bit and his bars clipped my bars, and that was quite an unnecessary fall. But geez, so yeah, he hit me like a ton of bricks.
Oh geez, so who needs enemies when you got riding mates like that, eh? But you guys got through in one piece, and I think what's notable there as well is your times on the trail, if you compare it to the racing stages, they were up there, yeah? Top 30 times.
Oh, we I mean, that was probably the fastest time I've ever done at Sarnie, and I think I did weigh about 10 k's less than I'm weighing now.
Yeah, man, that was really cool to watch, I must say. And actually, now that you mentioned the crash again, it triggers the old memory. You were definitely banged up. Did you a lot of rest and recovery after that? Because riding with broken ribs, that's probably one of the toughest things I can think of doing.
I actually had to have two operations on my arm the following week, where they did stitches in my arm at Sarnie on day two, but the wound wasn't cleaned properly, so I got an infection, and they had to cut out tissue, and yeah, two operations later, and yeah, it was quite a recovery.
Wow, I didn't know that part. Hey? So where's the scar? Was it on your arm?
Yeah, look at that, hey? There it is there.
Was that the handlebar that went into your arm there? My word. That is not fun. This is also quite a hairy story. It's on the finish line, though. This handlebar, similar thing. Person riding along a finishing line at the end of a mountain bike day, and one of the feather banners shifted in the wind, caught the edge of their handlebar, and they were literally riding into the finish and waving to their friends and family, and they didn't have bar ends on their bike, and handlebar switched, and it actually went into his leg, went under his skin, the one side, and popped out the other, standing on the finish line going, mate, you're 10 meters from the line. Handlebars, hectic. Yeah, you wouldn't think it, eh? So what's the moral of the story? Make sure you've got bar-ends on your bike. So you've got a great like personal story with the Cup Sarnie TC, but then also from a brand perspective, Rest Tonic. One thing I've always loved about the Rest Tonic crew at Sarnie is the energy. Like, you guys show up, you add value. Seems like there are 100 people in Rest Tonic kit that are riding. I imagine clients, people that work within the brand. It's, I would say, in some instances, quite unusual to see a brand embracing an event and actively participating in it to the point and the level that you guys do.
Yeah, Sarnie for us, I mean, it's a big team-building experience as well for our own staff. I mean, it's quite inspirational. A week after every Sarnie, I get phone calls to Rest Tonic head office, you know, where can I buy a Rest Tonic kit? And, you know, Lumo Yellow Rest Tonic kit has been quite iconic over the years, and yeah, we are blessed, eh, with such a good team of people at Rest Tonic. I mean, it's all about the people, and you know, we are nothing without the team that we've got.
And a lot of people I've noticed in the team, initially their logistics operations, and them too now on bikes, maybe on e-bikes, some of them, but they're there and they're riding.
Yeah. No, it's been incredible for me to see some of our staff members start off as crew. And I mean, if you look at Quirbus from Rest Tonic, I mean, he used to weigh about 140 kgs. He used to be a crew member. I think all the farmers along that whole route know old Quirby. And yeah, he's been riding a bike. He's changed his life. He probably weighs just over 100 kgs now. So it's been quite inspirational and rewarding just to see our team members have just improved their lives through getting involved in cycling. And yeah, I mean, we don't just work hard together, we cycle together on weekends, and it's huge for our team building.
There's two sides to the story though, right? Like, as in at the event, crew becoming riders, the health and wellness benefits of active sports, Quirbus losing a huge amount of weight. But the other side of that story is how you look after yourself off the bike. And I know that this is a very direct link into Rest Tonic, but I mean, that's the fact of the matter, right? Is as much as many of us, and perhaps myself not included in this instance, because my seafood diet hasn't been serving me that well, as in a seafood and I eat it of late. But rest and recovery, and in particular sleep, the more time that I've spent trying to get a better understanding of how important it is, I'm realizing that, number one, I'm probably never going to catch up on the sleep that I've lost. And I'm actually really now, as an individual outside of sportive endeavors, just prioritizing trying to get better sleep to the point of cutting alcohol and other things like that to make sure that I'm rested because poor sleep is at the core of many of our ailments as humankind.
Doug, you're so right. Sleep is so instrumental. It's one of the most underrated elements in terms of health and wellness. And people often, you know, put a lot of focus into their equipment, into their nutrition, into coaching and all of that, and they overlook, you know, the importance of sleep. I mean, a good night's sleep is so instrumental to recharge your body, for you to perform at your best, to achieve your dreams and goals in life. And it's just, you know, you need to make sure that you are giving your body that sleep that you need to recharge your body.
Yeah, it's strange to me how, I don't know if it's a predisposition or if it's just because of how we've been brought up or the era that we grew up in, that there's more of an inclination to push through stuff. As like, I've crashed my mountain bike and put my handlebar into my arm and I've got broken ribs, but I'm going to push through. Respect to you for that. But outside of like physical injury, we always want to push to do more, to achieve more. We never, or at least in from my personal experience, I've never really considered the importance of taking a break. To me, taking a break, resting more, prioritizing sleep has not been a priority. What are you guys seeing as a business? Is there a shift? Are you seeing sales volume pick up? Are you seeing more inquiries? I mean, you've got great resources on your website, podcast series with Dr. Alison Bentley, which I've dabbled in one or two. It seems like there's a bigger consciousness around the importance of recovery.
There has been a big shift in mindset, embracing the power of sleep. I mean, Restonic have been on a huge journey the last few years to educate and drive the power of sleep. We're the only bedding manufacturer in the world that has their own sleep clinic, and Dr. Alison Bentley is our sleep expert. She's renowned around the world, and our goal is to make people understand the importance a good night's sleep and a good bed plays in terms of overall health and wellness. It's one of the most important pillars of health and wellness. And I mean, we're there to educate people on why a good night's sleep is going to help with mental health, physical health, emotional health. It is so important, and you can't survive without sleep, and it's so underrated. Our goal is to just make sure that people see a bed as an investment in their life.
And if you think about, I mean, we're all busy, right? Especially, I'm 44 this year. How old are you?
43.
Mate, you look 35. Must be all the sleep. So we're at a phase of life now where things are pretty busy, right? And jobs, marriage, kids, life's busy. For you personally, what is do you have a sleep routine? How do you balance it? How do you prioritize it? What are your non-negotiables, so to speak, around sleep and how you integrate it into your life?
For me, you need to make sure that your sleep hygiene is on point. And when I say sleep hygiene, it's making sure that your sleeping environment is going to encourage that good night's sleep. So for me, I need a dark room. For me, that's important. If there's a bit of light, I struggle to fall asleep. So thick curtains, blocking out the light. Dark room's important. I need a medium firm bed is good for me. And you know, I can't go to bed without a glass of water. And I've also got cooling technology in terms of the foam in my bed. So I prefer a cooler sleep. I don't like beds that trap a lot of heat, and I tend to prefer, you know, quite a cool sleeping experience. Added bonus is to fall asleep holding my wife's hand and a bit of a cuddle. But yeah, that's my go-to.
So I've got a question on that. I also like a cool sleep, but my wife does not like a cool sleep. Do you guys do half and half mattresses? So she can have her hot sleep, 35 degrees sweating, and I can have my cool sleep. And if not, maybe that's an opportunity for you guys.
We did have a range called a his and hers range where you did have a different feel on each side, a firm and a softer feel, and you could have a difference in temperature regulation on each side. The challenge we found is to maintain a mattress, you need to rotate it on a monthly basis, and to rotate that bed, then you know your wife and you are going to be sleeping on different sides of the bed every night. So it's sometimes that becomes a little bit tricky. But a good option is to go for a hybrid where it's a combination of inner spring and foam, where hybrid beds tend to have more breathability and airflow, which helps with that. And you've got a good balance between best of both worlds there.
So, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of tech in these mattresses. Like what tech is there out there right now that you're most excited about that we probably don't know about as normal consumers that would page through a dial-a-bed booklet and be overwhelmed with lots of different mattress options?
In terms of sleep, I mean, we're living in a world these days where people are counting their calories, counting their steps. They log in their exercises on Strava, but they're also tracking their sleep. So there is a lot of smartwatches out there that are tracking sleep performance, Fitbits, Garmin's and Google Health. So I think people are becoming more cognizant on sleep performance and they are tracking their sleep. In terms of mattress tech, I mentioned there is, it's not groundbreaking, but there is a movement towards technology in the fabric that promotes the cooling experience. You've got a fabric called Sens Ice, which has a treatment in the fabric that gives you a much cooler feel while you sleep. And on the Restonic side, we've got a foam called Black Ice, which is a gel-infused memory foam with ceramic, which is scientifically proven to be 20% cooler than traditional foam. So it also promotes cooling. We've taken that one step further. We've got aeration holes punched through that foam to just promote airflow. So, yeah, cooling's quite a big thing as well.
Personally, never having been in a bed like that, it must feel like you're just floating.
It does. It feels like you're floating on a cloud.
I need to get one of these beds. I need to speak to my boss, though, hey? I need to get a raise. when it comes to maintenance of mattresses like that, and I suppose we're getting more into the technical side of things, rotation is obviously important. But simple things like how long should a mattress last? I suppose that's almost a how long is a string, piece of string type of question, because I'd imagine the level of mattress you buy will determine its overall lifespan. But say you're buying a mattress that you've just described now, what should you look for when it comes time to change it out? What is the expected lifespan? How do you manage your mattress, so to speak?
Yeah, like you said, it's difficult to say how long a mattress should last. Obviously, if you invest in the best you can afford from the start, that mattress is going to last you longer. The average lifespan, I would say, is about seven years. But you can have mattresses that can last you 20 years. So it's all about buying the best from the start, believing in the power of sleep. When you purchase in a bed, don't go and prioritize price over quality. And I would say when buying a bed, you need to also find something that's right for you. You know, what's good for you might not be good for me.
In my case, it's king size extra length. That's the most important. Are we good? We got to stop. Okay. But in all seriousness, king size extra length, that's my base. Like, if it doesn't...
And that's a common mistake. Eh? People sometimes don't take size of bed into account. And I mean, a tall person like you, I mean, you definitely need an extra length. But some people would buy a standard length and then realize that their feet are hanging over the bed and they needed an extra length, or they would buy a king size bed where they can't fit a king size bed into their room. So that is a common mistake. Another common mistake, people often don't test the bed before they buy it. I mean, it's so important to
do a proper bed test,
to lie on the bed and not just go to the store and touch it with your hand and sit on it. I mean, you don't sleep sitting. You need to lie on the bed in the same sleeping position that you normally lie at home.
So choosing a bed according to your budget is and kind of the best that you can buy in the category is probably the best way to go. But what kind of common mistakes do you see with people choosing a bed? I mean, for me, there's one set criteria. It needs to be long enough. I'm 2 meters tall. So king size extra length. It's very important. But what else?
I've seen people make that mistake, not taking extra length into account. I mean, someone like you definitely needs an extra length, but also some people don't take into account the size of their room. So they'd buy a king size bed and they don't take into account that it's not going to actually fit in their room if they take their pedestals into account. Sometimes they can't get it through, you know, the passageways getting into the room. Another big mistake people make is prioritizing price over quality. So often if people try to skimp on their mattress purchase, they're not buying, you know, the best support and comfort they need, and then they end up buying again. Another big mistake is people not testing the bed before they buy it. I mean, a bed is a personal purchase. What is good for you might not be good for me. And you need to go to a bed store. You need to lie on beds, lie in the same position that you would at home. And also bring your partner with, because you need to find a balance of what is good for both of you. And another big mistake, sorry, is you need to take trusted brand into account, and you need to buy from a credible retailer. Avoid Facebook Marketplace. Lots of fakes out there. Watch out for brands that you've never heard of offering big guarantees and crazy weight limits. Very often they can't hold to those promises.
Well, there are a lot of technical aspects, I'd imagine, into building mattresses for different categories and I wouldn't say different applications, but I would say different weight limits, different sizes, different comfort feels, and so on. What's the general methodology behind how you guys go about building out your range within Restonic? Because the one thing that is for sure is you guys do have something for pretty much everybody. But what are the kind of the fundamentals that you try and achieve with Restonic?
You're right, Doug. We've got a bed for everyone out there, and we've got different types of beds. So you get, I mean, several different types of beds. We've got foam beds, we've got hybrid beds, pocket spring beds, inner spring beds. It sounds confusing, but one is not better than the other. You need to find the right one for you. Inner spring beds, that's traditional Bonnell coils. It's probably the most widely used option. It's a little bit more bounce in the sleeping experience and good aeration, good support. Foam beds tend to be good for pressure point relief, and they also have a good weight carrying capacity, good for the heavier sleepers. There's a lot of different types of foam. Memory foam gives you that sinking feeling into the mattress conforming to the shape of your body, where a latex foam would be a little bit more responsive, a little bit more bounce back. And then pocket spring beds are good for motion isolation. So if your partner moves a lot at night and you don't want to wake up and hear that movement, a pocket spring bed is good. And then hybrid beds, often a good combination of foam and spring, tend to generally be pocket spring. And that's just balanced comfort and support, good breathability. You need to test those options and find the right option for you.
So support is a big one. And I think most cyclists listening in here, some of you are going to be under 60 kilos. Some of you are going to be like me and at 115. What are you looking for in that support and also when choosing a mattress and also kind of your preferred sleeping position? So for me, I find that strangely I sleep on my right-hand side a lot more than in any other position, to the point where some mornings I wake up and I'm a little bit stiff. Does that type of sleeping behavior or habit need to be taken into account when choosing a mattress and the weight limits?
Definitely. You need to take your sleeping position into account. You need to take your body type into account. Someone like you, Doug, that sleeps on your side, you need a softer sleeping surface that allows your shoulders and your hips to sink into the mattress, keeping your spinal alignment straight. So you need to find the comfort level that's right for you and right for your sleeping position. So stomach and back sleepers tend to sleep better on a firmer sleeping surface, so they don't sink too much into the mattress and they're keeping their spinal alignment nice and straight.
I think I sleep on my right-hand side because if I sleep on my back, I do from time to time, very seldomly. I think it's only actually been 4 times in my life I've snored and my missus gives me grief. So then I end up rolling onto my right-hand side. Now it's just become default. It's almost a sleeping safety mechanism that my brain makes sure that I do. So it's like subconscious. I don't even think about that. I need to change that somehow.
And also for heavier sleepers out there, you need to also take that into account when you're buying a mattress. You need to make sure it's got a spring system or a support core, comfort layers that can give you that additional support. So, I mean, a mattress, an inner spring mattress with very few comfort layers won't offer enough comfort and support for the heavier sleeper. So you need to take that into account as well. So normally your dual spring mattresses and your foam mattresses tend to be better options for those type of sleepers.
And things like mattress toppers and protectors worthwhile considering, or do you want to look at something that's, I suppose, more permanent, as in built into the mattress?
A topper is basically a quick fix for, say, a mattress that's not right for you or might be on the last edge of the life cycle and you need to replace that mattress. But a mattress protector is extremely important. A mattress protector, you must see it as insurance for your mattress. It's a small cost to protect a big investment. And it protects your mattress from dust mites, spills, stains. And it helps improve the overall hygiene of your mattress. So a mattress protector is extremely important. And I'd advise everyone to, if they purchase a bed, to make sure that bed is bought with a mattress protector.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Yeah, looking at your website here, you guys have incredible resources available. In fact, it's the most comprehensive bed website that I've ever been to. You've really put in a lot of effort in terms of educating users or purchasers. But I also see different ranges here available. You've got a hotelier range, you've got standard range, exclusive ranges. What are the differences between those ranges, high level wise speaking, with like a hotelier range versus the others?
So your hotelier ranges tend to have more options for, say, we call them rotators, so sleep surfaces on the top and bottom side. You just get more longevity out of the mattress. But there is lots of similarities between our hotelier range and some of our other ranges, but we've got pocket spring ranges, we've got foam ranges. Something super exciting, we're launching a new brand in July this year. Watch this space.
I thought you were going to say it's going to be in everyone's tents at Sani.
Maybe next year. But yeah, it's a premium brand called Genesi, which we're bringing back, and it's going to be extremely special.
Okay, well, I'm keen to give that a dabble at some point. And outside of that type of information, access to the podcast, access to your sleep clinic, it's a very well-rounded value proposition, right? You're almost walking the road with someone from start to finish on their journey of trying to improve their sleep, improve their lives within the budget that they have. When it comes to like the sleep school specifically, was that something that you guys did from the start? Is it something that's evolved? And if people want to find out more, how do they get involved? How do they make use of that type of opportunity?
Our purpose is to enable success and well-being through the power of sleep. So this is something we're passionate about. It's something that just doesn't fit in our tagline. Our tagline is believe in the power of sleep, and having our own sleep clinic is proof that we're serious about this. This is not just a statement on our website and a PowerPoint presentation. We believe it, we live it every single day. We started this partnership with WITS Health Consortium about a year ago. We've got a sleep clinic in Johannesburg called Restonic Essentia Sleep Clinic, and this helps us guide sleep deprived individuals to get the professional help they need to improve their sleep. You do have people out there that have the perfect bed for them, that they, it's perfect support, comfort, everything's good for their sleeping position, still not getting a good night's sleep. They need professional help to help them with the sleeping disorder to improve their sleep. So this power of sleep movement is something that we embarked on a few years ago, and it's something that we drive every day, and it's quite rewarding being able to be involved in a job that markets and sells mattresses, and a mattress is an inspirational part of someone's goals and dreams in life. And I know if someone's sleeping well, they're gonna achieve, you know, their goals and dreams. So it's quite a rewarding job I've got.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, the narrative of what you guys are looking to achieve through Restonic, and then you look at the broader kind of Cup Limited as a company that you fit within and being the change, there's definitely a very clear thread between all the businesses that fit within the overall Cup group, that it's a very purpose-driven, value-driven, people-focused strategies. And what's refreshing, and at least from my perspective, is I've been able to experience that firsthand through events like the Cup Signing to See, because that is where you see a lot of that come to life. So that's really cool.
And that's why Sani is such a good fit for us and the Cup Group. I mean, Farmer Glenn and his family, they like-minded people, same values. And I mean, also seeing you at most of those 11 Sani's, I mean, you've become part of the family, and you also make that race special for everyone every year.
Do my best, eh? Do my best. As I must say, it's good fun. I'm just happy to be part of it. I will ride it one day, though. I'm adamant. Farmer, if you're listening, one day, please. You need to ride this thing.
I'll arrange the helicopter.
I'm not going to do the double header. That's for sure. But if I mean, so we've talked a lot about the importance of sleep, but when you look at a race village environment, not necessarily the most restful sleeping situation. You've got snorers, you've got logistics, you've got all sorts of things happening. When we talk about sleep hygiene in that context, as someone that is a well-traveled stage race practitioner, what would your sleep hygiene tips be to someone that is going to be moving into and sleeping in a race village setup, and how to get the best possible sleep in an out-of-home experience?
I think preparation is important, so just make sure that you are quite organized in terms of your preparation and your packing for each day. I mean, putting all your race clothes into, you know, Ziploc bags and just making things easier just to manage around in your tent. And earplugs, you need earplugs. I mean, those snoring noises in the race villages, I mean, that's next level. And I think a set of earplugs is a must.
So with your personal choice on earplugs, what do you go with? Those ones that are foam-based, you squeeze down, they kind of expand in your ear. Do you go with the wax one? What is your...
The wax ones work well for me. And if something that we have been assisting Sani with the last couple of years, small memory foam pillows, I think it just helps. I mean, we'd love to kit out every sleep village tent with a Restonic bed, but it's not possible at this stage. But that pillow also helps with the sleep.
So, yeah, are you ready for Sani? That's my last question.
Every year I say to myself, next year I'm coming back stronger and fitter, and I think I'm a little bit undercooked this year, but I mean, every year it's such a special race, and always come back with good memories, meet new friends. And it's also quite nice the last couple of years to see more female riders, and it's nice to just see that evolve over the years. And looking forward, I can't wait. Hope the weather's good, and that Umka, I can't wait.
Well, you guys always treat us to all sorts of interesting activations as well, so we're definitely looking forward to that. And yeah, thanks for making the effort to coming and chatting to us. I've certainly learned to have a hell of a lot. You'll be pleased to know that a year and a half ago, I too went and purchased a Restonic mattress. I'm officially part of the team. I just want to know when my cycling kit's going to arrive, but we can talk about that offline.
No, looking forward. Thanks so much, Doug. And to everyone out there, believe in the power of sleep.
This podcast was brought to you by Restonic, whose purpose is to enable well-being and success through the power of sleep.